everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I am Dan Malin, joined as always by Matt Sells, Fantasy Sports Writer of the Year. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a lighter week this week with the All-Star race on tap, but we're still getting you the coverage you want.
Yeah, it's a really really light week this week. We'll still talk about last week's race, Kansas. Personally, I won't sugarcoat it. I had a really bad experience with Kansas. It was a combination of taking a nap 2 hours before the race, waking up to realize there were a bunch of people that failed inspection while also trying to go see Avengers Endgame, trying to mix up my lineups during the previews of Avengers Endgame. It just didn't go well for me personally because I was just stupid in how I planned out all my time on Sunday. But apparently we had a subscriber that hit pretty big, correct?
Yeah, we got news that a subscriber of ours won $5,000 in a GPP on Saturday night at Kansas. So that was pretty awesome to see. We had some other pretty solid wins in terms of ROI, not necessarily like with a comma in them, but nice ROI returns there. Yeah, Saturday was an intense afternoon because there was just a massive amount of position changes that happened because it was an impound race. So if you failed tech inspection, your qualifying time was disallowed, which is by NASCAR's terms a punishment, but by DFS standards, that's a bonus.
It's a gift.
Yeah. So when I think 5 of the top 8 cars failed inspection and 9, or actually 11 overall, but really only 9 that we cared about, failed inspection, it was kind of crazy in basically redoing the practice to qualifying table, adjusting the playbook, right, redoing the lineups, because now some of the cheap guys were not great plays because they had qualified reasonably highly to begin with, and then they bumped up like 7 spots, which then completely killed their position differential. But yeah, overall, the actual race was pretty awesome to watch. There was a ton of passing. There was a ton of side-by-side racing. In the end, Brad Keselowski won, who looked like he had no business competing in that race for most of it. But in the way that Brad Keselowski and Paul Wolff do, they fought back and wound up winning on essentially a sprint to the finish. It was like a 2-lap green flag race to the finish there. But yeah, it was a really exciting race to watch.
Now, for future reference, is it pretty smart that anytime there's an impound race that we could expect to see more drivers fail inspection?
Yeah, as this season has shown us, I think there's been 2 or 3. This was at least the second impound race. I think it might have been the 3rd impound race. Several drivers have failed inspection previously during those impounds and shifted to the back. So anytime there's an impound race, which generally occurs when it's only a 2-day race weekend, it's a pretty good idea to check in a few hours before the race and make sure the guys are still starting where you think they're starting.
All right. So, special note, I guess just, you know, anytime there's an impound race, don't try to also schedule tickets to go see the biggest movie in the history of mankind. Now, moving on, this week is a unique. It's an all-star weekend for NASCAR, so it's a lighter race. I mean, normally this is around the time where I would ask Matt to just break down the track and what makes Charlotte so special, but we'll touch on that this week because, I mean, next week is also a Charlotte race, but what can we expect this weekend in this particular all-star race?
So, yeah, it is a Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is a mile-and-a-half track. It's known as a quad oval because the front stretch has 2 turns in it. So if you look at an overhead view, you'll notice that there's kind of 2 angles and then a straight part to the front straight. The turns are banked at 24 degrees from the apron all the way up to the wall on both ends of the track. But the All-Star race is not a full race in terms of racing field or length. So this year, the All-Star race is 85 total laps. It's broken up into 4 stages. Those stages are, the first stage is 30 laps, the second and third stages are 20 laps each, and then the final stage is 15 laps. And in terms of the field, there are 15 cars set in the field right now. that were automatic qualifiers. And there's a max of another four that can join, but you won't find out if they're joining until Saturday. Some of them won't join until about an hour before the green flag drops for the All-Star race, because one driver is going to win the fan vote and they get into the All-Star race. And then if you win the stages of the Monster Energy Open, which is a 50-lap race that happens at 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night, then every stage winner from that race gets automatically put into the All-Star race. But that's the thing, it doesn't run until 6 p.m. on Saturday night, and the All-Star race starts at 8 p.m. on Saturday night. So, you know, those guys aren't going to get added until right before the green flag drops.
Now, will they be added on FanDuel and DraftKings? Do you happen to know that? I know it's
so, yeah, that's
a really short time frame.
Is that if you look at the track breakdown that I have up at Fantasy Alarm, yes, I did a track breakdown for the All-Star race. Does not look anything like the previous track breakdowns, but there are some historical notes in there. There's a breakdown of the format and what you can expect from the cars and whatnot. We also included the salaries on both DraftKings and FanDuel this week. And DraftKings has approximately twice as many drivers already listed in the salaries as FanDuel does. FanDuel only has the 15 that automatically qualified, and DraftKings has like 27 or 28 drivers in there. And a bunch of them, you'll notice, have Qs next to their name. That means that they're questionable because they may not make the All-Star race. So you want to pay attention to that. But yes, in previous years, they have gone ahead and added the drivers that make it on Saturday into the field about an hour ahead of time. So if you're not doing anything on Saturday night and you want to check your lineups, you can add some new drivers in about an hour before the race gets underway.
All right. Now, briefly touching on, I guess, DFS strategy, is this a race that you're probably going to take a little more lightly? I know I'm probably only going to play about... Typically with NASCAR, I'll play between 7 to 10 lineups on both DraftKings and FanDuel. I think this weekend I may only play 3 to 4. I don't plan on going too heavy.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking this weekend light. There's just not as many contests to play. The sites don't take it that seriously. And B, you've only got a max of a 19-car field, so...
There's not much variety or variation. Everybody's going to
be highly owned because you're talking about a field that's half the size of a normal race. And in terms of strategy, it's going to be a very low scoring race because it's only 85 laps long. So even if you lead every lap, that's almost no laps led points. Position differential, even if you start in the back, that's 19th and you win the thing. I mean, yeah, it's 19 points of position differential, but you know, it's not as much as you can get in other races. So I'm also going to be taking it pretty lightly this week. It's an exhibition race, so it just doesn't warrant that much playing.
Okay. Now, in terms of programming notes, do you have anything special? And I can't imagine there's too many qualifying notes or practice notes for this race. You should take seriously?
I mean, there are practices and there's qualifying. But yeah, we're not going to be doing any practice reports for this one, just cause it just doesn't really,
it's exhibition. No one's
it just doesn't really matter.
Copy. All right, let's just get into the drivers. I mean, Matt and I, plan on just doing a really quick podcast for this one, this All-Star race. Who are some of the drivers that we should be looking at that may have just run pretty well at Charlotte in the past?
Yeah. So, you know, if we're looking at history here, Jimmy Johnson stands out. He's got the most wins of any driver active right now in the All-Star race. He's won it 4 times. He's got 11 top 10s in his 17 races. And yes, I know that's not a massive accomplishment when you're only beating half the field, but it's still 11 top 10s. It counts for something. You know, he pops out. Kevin Harvick won this race last year. He's got 2 wins in this event, and also 11 top 10s. Kyle Busch has been pretty strong in the All-Star race. because, you know, when prime time happens, Kyle Busch shows up. So, yeah, I mean, if you're in this race, you're a high-quality driver, because the way you automatically qualify is you have to have either won a cup points race in 2018 or 2019, okay? Or you have to have been a previous All-Star race winner, or you have to be a current or former Cup Series champion, okay? So we're not talking about guys that just got hot in the first half of the season and fans voted them in like some other sports. We're talking about guys that have, you know, had staying power over at least the last year and a half. But in terms of careers, you know, we're talking Jimmy Johnson, Kevin Harvick, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, Joey Logano is an automatic qualifier. So, you know, there's a lot of guys. You're going to know everybody in this field. There's not going to be a surprise entry or, you know, a landing castle type.
Or Tyler Reddick from last week.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Hemric is up for the fan vote, so there you go. There's your Hemric reference.
Yeah, there's my guy.
And who knows? I mean, if you win a stage in the Open, you qualify. And Ty Dillon has somehow managed to win two stages this year in two consecutive races. So, you know, crazy things have happened, but you're still going to know basically everybody in this field. So,
if Daniel Hemric wins the fan vote, you all can thank me.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Last time I saw
Matt DiBenedetto was in the lead, ahead of actually Kyle Larson, who right now that's his way to get in unless he wins a stage in the Open. But in terms of guys that are high up on the salary board, I mean, Kyle Busch is most expensive on both sites. The salaries are also depressed this week, which makes sense. It's, you know, an exhibition. Go back and look at what the salaries were in the Clash.
I noticed they're a little more depressed on DraftKings than they are on FanDuel. Would it be a better week to maybe, I mean, if we're going to play light, would it be better to play on, I'm sorry, DraftKings? Would it be better to play on DraftKings than FanDuel? Because Kyle Busch is 10,500.
Yeah, I mean, he's that's pretty cheap. I mean, you've only got two drivers over 10 grand on DraftKings. It's Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott are both over 10 grand. I mean, his price is depressed on FanDuel too. He's 14 grand. I mean, he's been up in the 15 range quite a bit this year. He is still $1,000 more than Kevin Harvick, who's 13 grand. So, you know, all of the prices are deflated. You still manage to have a $5,000 driver on FanDuel in Ryan Newman. So, you know, like we said, you're going to know basically everybody in this race. Everybody's here for a reason.
I know we talked about Harvick as well as Jimmy Johnson. I know we also mentioned that everybody, like, we're aware of everybody's names. Is there a cheap option that just jumps off the page at you right away?
I mean, Austin
Dillon.
Whether
they've already qualified or not.
Austin Dillon is an automatic qualifier who's $5,800 on DraftKings.
And in a race where it's an exhibition, you feel like he has a... I mean, it's an exhibition race, so...
Anybody's got a shot. Let's put it this
way.
Exactly. It's not like there's nothing on the line here. The winner of the All-Star race wins $1 million cash.
Exactly. So Jimmy Johnson at 6,500. He won the Clash earlier this year. And so in an exhibition race, I know I've been salty on him the past couple weeks, but at 6,500 in a race that ultimately doesn't matter, I'm actually more inclined to play Jimmy Johnson this week than ever before.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is this, and I made mention of it in the track breakdown, but I'll mention it here too. Last year in the All-Star race, the package that we've seen on the track this year made its debut. The 2019 Aero package was debuted at the All-Star race last year, and it got such rave reviews that NASCAR decided to put it in for the package this year. It was not a given we were going to see this package until everybody liked it in the All-Star race last year. And now apparently everybody hates it, but that's besides the point. This week in the All-Star race, we are not going to see the 2019 Aero package. We are going to see an Aero package that won't be on a car until 2021.
This could benefit pretty much anybody. This could actually benefit Kevin Harvick.
There will be elements of what they're calling. So NASCAR is working on what they're calling the Gen 7 car. What they're currently driving is the Gen 6 car. The Gen 7 car is slated to debut in 2021. Elements of that car are making its debut in the All-Star race this weekend. What those entail is they're going to change the splitter a little bit, so it'll be carbon fiber. It'll be all one piece instead of having the pan and the splitter two separate pieces. This is getting a little into the weeds, but it makes the car more stable and more consistent in traffic aerodynamically. The other change is they're going to move around a radiator duct, which right now exits the air into the engine compartment, and now it's going to exit it through the hood. So that'll change some stuff a little bit too. So it's not going to be the absolute same aero package we've seen these guys now get used to for 11 races. So that could change some stuff as well. But generally speaking, we're talking about an 85-lap sprint for $1 million.
All right. And
so can happen.
So pretty much any driver that's in the race is on the table for a DFS lineup. Is there anyone that you're absolutely going to be fading?
I mean, it's pretty hard to say that I would absolutely fade somebody in this kind of race.
I get it. I'm not mad about that. But
I mean, Clint Bowyer historically hasn't been great in his 9 All-Star races. He goes backwards a little bit, but you also have to take into account that he hasn't always been in the best equipment. He also hasn't been in the best headspace for a chunk of that. And now with Stuart Haas, he's having a resurgence. So it's not like, it's all been the same and he's just been bad. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into this. So, I mean, you're talking about a 19-car field. It's kind of hard to fade any
I get it. I mean, I'm approaching it. I'm not going to make many lineups, so I'm not going to necessarily, count anybody out because it's such a small field.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Yeah, got anything else for the listeners and viewers this week?
Just pay attention on Saturday night because you never know who's going to get added to the All-Star race that's not currently in there.
All right. And the race is at what time on Saturday?
The Monster Energy Open, which is a 50-lap preview race that also has 21 cars in it, by the way. That's at 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night. The All-Star race is then at 8 p.m. Eastern or at some point following the Open, depending on how long that goes. But, and one other quick note. I had mentioned in previous podcasts that usually there is a pit road requirement during the All-Star race where you have to take a four-tire stop at some point. That's the case this year.
Yep, good call.
You can do whatever you want to on your pit stops. You're not required to take a certain number of tires. You're not required to fill up a certain number of times with gas. So, you'll see all sorts of different pit strategies happen because you're talking about a sprint.
All right, good stuff for a short podcast. Matt, thank you as always.
Sure thing.
Best of luck to everybody this week on a All-Star weekend. Good luck, guys.